So welcome, everyone. This is our Lag BaOmer, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, class 5786. And this class is in honor of the Lag BaOmer celebration going on in the world. And we wish, of course, for Shalom. I believe that the 500,000 or so Jews who normally would be in Israel in a special city today, I believe they were forbidden from going there because Hezbollah is just to the north, and I believe they weren't allowed to gather in honor of today. So we're going to hopefully make up for the fact that they can't do it there, so we're going to try to light a little fire of Torah right here. So I want to introduce you to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who's the hero of tonight's talk. But in order to understand the talk, I want to speak a little bit in. Now, don't let your eyes roll over, please. We're going to talk halacha, Jewish law. So there's a famous debate. Do mitzvot, do the commandments that we keep, do they need intention, kavanah? So for example, let's say you open a box of your favorite Manischewitz matzah, and you don't even realize that you're supposed to eat matzah on Passover. And it just so happens to be the 15th of Nisan at night, and you open a piece of matzah, and you eat your matzah. Do you get credit for the Torah commandment because you didn't intend to eat it for the sake of Passover? Or let's say you happen to be practicing blowing shofar. Oh my gosh, it was Rosh Hashanah today, and I blew shofar, but I didn't intend to blow shofar for the mitzvah. So it's a big debate about whether a mitzvah, when you're doing something, do you have to have in mind, in your heart, in your focus of our conscious, this is what I'm doing. And of course, we normally do, because if you translate the blessing, you're saying on the mitzvah of listening to the Megillah, for the mitzvah of listening to shofar, right? But maybe someone doesn't do it that way. So there is a debate between two famous rabbis, Rabbi Shimon, our rabbi, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi, Rabbi Judah, Rabbi Yehuda. And they have the same debate by whether mitzvahs need intention, and it also applies to Shabbos. So here's the scenario, ready? This is a good rabbi question scenario. Let's say it's a beautiful summer day, and you have a beautiful grass area in your lawn, and you're sitting outside, but the sun comes out from behind the clouds, and it's beating down upon you. And you think to yourself, oh my gosh, I want to be outside, but I can't be in the direct sunlight. And you look over and you realize like 50 feet away and you're on your property on the grass, there's like a little bit of a shaded area under the tree. So you pick up the huge bench where you were sitting in the direct sunlight and you start to drag it across your grass. But unfortunately, you're making furrows. I would not do this on the 18th green of the Masters, not if you want to stay alive. Right? So you drag that bench across the grass, causing furrows. You're destroying the grass, which you can't do in Shabbat. It's one of the 39 prohibited work types of creative work. So the question is, can you do it? Are you responsible? So in other words, if my intention is to move the bench out of the sunshine, I didn't want the furrows to be created, so therefore am I obligated or not? So again, Rabbi Shimon says, yeah, you know, what you intend, that's impactful. And that's what counts. You have to intend something. It's not just the action, it's the intention. Rabbi Judah would argue with Rabbi Shimon and he would say, no, 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 no. You did it. What you thought about it, we really don't care. Now, why is this germane? Because it's going to come up in this incredible Talmudic story, which is, I'm not exaggerating, one of the most read and researched and famous stories in all of the Talmud. They're called Agadotos, which means they're stories opposed to Jewish law. But you're going to see how the aforementioned, my kavana, whether I have intention or not, it's going to count a lot. So here's the story, okay? There was a title that the Roman Empire bestowed upon those rabbis. They used to call them the Rosh HaMidabrim, the first of the speakers. And it was a special, important title. And it was given to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Judah, that we just spoke about in the debate. He was given that moniker. Now, why did it matter? So suppose under Roman law, a bunch of rabbis got together. Let's say we're a bunch, eight of us here tonight. Heaven help you, because it will go on really long. Okay? So you had a bunch of rabbis here. And Rabbi Judah was one of the eight rabbis. By Roman law, punishable by who knows what, Rabbi Judah gets to open, because that's considered the most prestigious thing, because hopefully people aren't sleeping yet. So he would always be the first. Now, how did he get that title? Well, there's a story here. There are four rabbis, and they're in like a study hall alone. There's Rabbi Judah. I'll just use their English names, okay? Rabbi Judah, the guy we're talking about now, who became the elevated one who always spoke first. Rabbi Shimon, our hero, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. There was a rabbi, it's funny because they call him Jose in one of the translations, but it's Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi. And then there was a fourth guy who was a guy named Yehuda, the son of proselytes. But he wasn't like one of the three main rabbis. So he was just there like in the corner listening to the three rabbis argue. So the first rabbi, Judah, got up and he started speaking about the Roman Empire. Now remember, their teacher, Rabbi Akiva, was tortured and dismembered and killed by the Romans. So there can't be a lot of love that any of these rabbis would have had. They would have had tremendous antipathy towards the Roman Empire. So maybe what Rabbi Judah is going to do now is out of a little bit of a fear factor. And in the end of the story, you'll hear maybe why he was a little scared. So Rabbi Judah says, you know, he's thinking, well, how can I say anything nice about the Romans, right? So he says, well, you know, they built bathhouses and they built beautiful malls, marketplaces. And, you know, they built beautiful, magnificent bridges. Look at how they helped us. And by the way, before I go on, a direct quote from John Cleese. I did not see this movie, but from there was a movie that you do not want to see because it's heretical, called The Life of Brian. And here's the quote, which is literally from our Talmud. You ready? So Reg, John Cleese says, "What have the Romans ever done for us?" And he says, and he answers himself rhetorically, "Well, apart from the sanitation, the medicine, education, wine, public order, irrigation, roads, the fresh water system, public health, what had the Romans ever done for us?" So that's like Rabbi Judah, right? He's saying, I bet Monty Python, I bet they got it right from this Talmud, right? So he basically says, look, they made the bathhouses, they made the bridges, they made the markets. Wow. Now Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Jose, he doesn't really agree. I mean, he knows they built these three things, but you know, he's too scared to say anything publicly to contradict Rabbi Judah, because for fear, the Romans are not a forgiving nation. So he says nothing. Silence. And Rabbi Shimon, who was a zealot, a kanoi, he says, you know, Rabbi Yehuda, you're absolutely right. They built marketplaces. You know why? To sell our young girls as harlots. Bravo. And they built bathhouses. Again, for their own joy. They never allow a Jew in there. It's, again, to have the girls, and it's just for their own joy and stress release. And you're right. They built bridges to take tolls from poor people. None of this they did for the betterment of Jewish people or mankind. So again, let's stop. So Rabbi Judah and Rabbi Shimon are keeping with exactly the same debate, right, that they had by whether a mitzvah needs intention or whether if I drag that bench, right? Because think about it. Rabbi Judah's looking at what? The end result. They built bridges. They built bathhouses. They built markets. He's not thinking about what their thought process was, why they did it. Rav Shimon says, yeah, you're right, they did it. But I'm looking at their heart, at their kavanah. So you see how it kind of fits together? We'll come back to this in a few minutes. It's very important. So the fourth guy, this Rabbi Yehuda, the son of proselytes, he's got a big mouth, which is exactly what Rabbi Yehuda feared and Rabbi Jose, who was quiet. He goes home and probably tells his wife. She twitters it out. The Romans are monitoring the Jewish ex-Twitter Facebook sites. And the officers bring this to the attention of Caesar. Caesar is very unimpressed, yeah? Julius is very upset. He's eating a salad, and he's looking at what these famous rabbis are saying about him, right? So he looks at Rabbi Judah, and he says, hey, he's one of our guys. My gosh, look what he said. The bathhouses, the bridges, he loves Rome. I elevate him, I hereby say, by the power divided by me, because he's God, that he should be the head rabbi, elevated to the status of the head talker. Okay, that's how he got his famous moniker. And what about this Rabbi Jose, this guy, this Yossi character? Well, he didn't say anything deleterious. But why didn't he extol the virtues of Rome? Get him out of Israel. And they threw him out of Israel. He declared he has to go to exile, never to return again. And then he hears the report about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And he thinks to himself, he's dead. And he puts out a contract on his life. Wanted, dead or alive. So all the post offices over Israel, they have the picture of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, you know, X'd out, wanted, dead or alive, and they erase the word alive. So they're looking for him. So the story goes on. It's a great story, right? I got your attention here. So Rabbi Shimon and his son, Rabbi Elazar, the two of them were illustrious sages. They're already great rabbis, having been taught by Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so they're great rabbis. They are worried. So they go hide out in a faraway little base medrash, in a little study hall. And every day, Mrs. Rebbetzin Bar Yochai brings some delicious food for her husband and her son, Elazar. And they're like off the beaten path. So anybody coming to look for them doesn't find them. Caesar hears the report. Shimon still lives. So he elevates the reward on his life. And all of a sudden, every bounty hunter in Israel, or as the Romans called Israel, they nicknamed it Palestine, to shtoch the Jews. That's where it came from, okay? Because of the Philistines, they were the ones to delegitimize our claim to that land. That's just the history, okay? So all the bounty hunters all over Israel are now trying to get Shimon. So he says to his son, you know, our wives are in trouble here. Because sooner or later, they're going to either follow them and catch us, or they're going to take them, interrogate them, and they'll be killed, and then they'll find us and kill us. So we got to go away. And so they left town without even telling their wives where they went. And they found a little cave, and I actually saw the cave years ago when I visited Israel. It's a little cave in a place called Pekin in Israel, up north, a little tiny place. And they found a cave, and they hid in the cave. And there was a carob tree that miraculously was nearby. Now, the carob that you get on Tu B'Shvat is the dried version that will knock all your teeth out. The actual fruit is delicious and very protein-rich, and it's amazing. So there was carob to eat, and there was a Poland Springs bottles of water, thousands of them waiting for them. There was a well there, beautiful well. So they had what to eat, they had what to drink, but they didn't have it. They only had one change of clothes because they didn't count on like exiting stage left. So they decided, you know, what are we going to do? So they used to preserve their clothes. They didn't know how long they were going to be there. They kind of took their clothes off, and they were in their tzitzis and, you know, undershorts, their boxers, and they put their clothes to the side, and they covered themselves in sand so they wouldn't be exposed while they're learning Torah. And they spent day and night when they weren't sleeping or davening or praying, and they were learning Torah back and forth. I'll explain how they did it in a second. And then when it came time for prayer, they put their clothes on, daven, then took them off, and they were out. So for 12 years, the Talmud says, they were able to carry this on. 12 years. Now you might say, but Rabbi, if they ran away in haste, where were like, was there like a stone chumash for them to learn from? Now you see, they knew off by heart the entirety of the written Torah, because they were geniuses, and they were Talmidim, students of Rabbi Akiva. You might say, but what about the oral Torah? Well, this predates the writing down of the oral Torah. The Mishnah wasn't written down till later. So the Mishnah existed orally. So they took all of their teachings, and the two of them knew everything, and they grew. They just argued together and fought together, father and son, and they each, every day, just learned and debated and argued for 12 years. Talk about rabbis arguing? Wow. So after 12 years, Etu Brute. I'm just joking. I don't know who this is. They don't identify which Caesar it was. But maybe it was Julius himself. He met Brutus, yeah? And that was over. So as is a custom, right, when the new Caesar comes in, the new king comes in, he pardons all the people just to get favor, to curry favor with the people. So he pardoned all the wanted criminals in the kingdom, including Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. He pardoned them all. The only problem was he didn't have Wi-Fi there in the cave. Nobody knew he was in the cave. So one day, Elijah delivered a Jerusalem Post to his door. Okay, fine. Elijah, or some voice, comes to the door and it yells, "Who will tell Bar Yochai," meaning Rabbi Shimon, "Caesar is dead and he's a free man?" So they leave the cave. They put their clothes back on and they come down out of the mountainous area. and there's a beautiful field, a lush field, and it's harvest time. And people, Jewish guys, women, people are out there harvesting. Now, for 12 years, what have they been doing day and night? Torah, Torah, Torah. It's not talking about Pearl Harbor, please. That was a bad one. Remember the movie, yes. Torah, Torah, Torah? Okay, that wasn't my own joke. Somebody came up with that today. Okay, so Torah, Torah, Torah. And here you have farmers. And what are the farmers doing? You know what the farmers are doing? They're harvesting. Well, there's no crime there. This is what Jewish people do. I mean, you can learn Torah, but in Kemach ain't Torah. You need flour. You need people to be farmers. So you can be a rabbi and learn Torah and be a farmer at the same time. People were. So what's the harm? But you see, to them, they were hyper-focused. I have to learn Torah 24-7 because that's all they were doing. That was their experience. So the Torah says wherever they looked, fire burned up the fields, the crops. Not the people, but the crops. So a voice from heaven came down. Why did I let you out of the cave? To destroy my world? Go back in the cave! But it didn't tell them how far back to go. So they went back in the cave, and they were feeling badly because they obviously had done a sin. And so they each looked at each other, and they made a little arithmetic cheshbon. They said, well, when you say Kaddish for our mom and dad, God forbid who passes, it's only 12 months of mourning. Because that's the maximum punishment in the place where the fun stops. Gehenna, you know, place down below with no AC. And so we're going to go down, we'll go back in the cave for 12 more months. So they waited 12 more months, and they came out. And Rabbi Shimon turned to his son, and he said, son, Elazar, he said, you know, if we're the only two people focused on Torah, and everyone else is doing their stuff, the world will exist really nice. Dai le'olam ani vato. It's enough that the world will be okay because we're learning Torah. So listen to this. They come, and it's right before Shabbat. There's an 18-minute period after the ladies, or you, perhaps light your Shabbat candles. And 18 minutes after that candle lighting is what's called Shkia, sunset. So for men, you can use that 18 minutes to drive to synagogue, to do last-minute prep. Women can make a conscious mental intent that I'm lighting at 18 minutes, but I'm not accepting Shabbos formally until sunset. So women could do that, but they have to make a mental note. Okay, so it's like almost Shabbos, 3 minutes before Shabbos, and Rabbi Shimon and his son Elazar are walking to synagogue. It's time to daven, Shabbos, right? This old Jewish guy is running, and he sits us flying, he's having, you know, his yarmulke, and he has two bunches of myrtle branches in his hands, and he bumps right into Rabbi Shimon Elazar. In other words, the old man either forgot it was Shabbos, was like 3 minutes away from desecrating Shabbat. Okay, let me ask you, just think, just stop for a second. 12 months earlier, I would fear for this old man's safety because they would be like, what are you doing? Right? They blew up the poor farmer's fields because they weren't learning Torah. This guy's almost like desecrating Sabbath. You can only imagine they would be angry beyond words. Instead, Rabbi Shimon says to the old man, hey, why are you in such a rush 3 minutes before Shabbos? Old man says, well, I went out to beautify my Shabbat table in honor of Shabbos. I wanted to get flowers. Myrtles are one of the four species that we have in the lulav, you know, the hadassim. He says, hadassah. So he says, I want myrtles. They smell beautiful. It's to honor my Shabbat. Rabbi Shimon says, why two? Why isn't one good enough? He says, because there's two expressions in the two different parts of the Ten Commandments. The first time in Exodus when it mentions the Ten Commandments, and the second time in Deuteronomy, one expression is to keep Shabbat, one is to remember Shabbat. So I have one for each one. So Rabbi Shimon smiles, and he breaks out into a beaming, beautiful smile. He looks over to son Elazar. He says, look at these beautiful Jews. Look at this incredible man. Look how dear and in love with the Torah and mitzvot and Shabbos this man is. That's the end of the story. Now think about this. What did Rabbi Shimon just do? He used his own theory, right? Prior to the 12 months, he probably would have gone nuclear on the poor guy. You're almost breaking Shabbos. But what did he ask? What's in the man's heart, right? Like, what are you thinking? Why are you doing this? And when the man explained his actions, what his kavanah, what his thought process was, what did Rav Shimon, what did he respond? Magnificent. Bravo. You're the best. So you see that Rabbi Shimon learned his lesson, that he sobered up about reality. It's not for every Jew to sit in a school yeshiva day and night. That's for some, great. But the rest of us, we can have some Torah like we have tonight, but we are engaged in the real world. And guess what? Bravo. That's what God wants from us. That's what he expects from us. So on this day of Lag BaOmer, we honor the memory. This is the Yahrzeit, believe it or not, of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai today. And instead of being sad on the Yahrzeit, instead of it being a somber occasion, he said before he died, I want you to light a fire. I want you to get together and celebrate my who I was and my becoming. And that's what we're doing tonight. And I really believe that from this story, this incredible story from Shabbat that we just examined, you see, before we jump to any conclusion about our fellow Jew, every one of us has our own unique way of honoring God, of serving God, yeah? So we don't dare open our mouths, critique someone else. Minimally ask, hey, I didn't see that this should be honored that way. Tell me, what is that custom? Where does it come from? Engage. Don't criticize. And more than anything, as Reb Shimon and his son learned, there are so many different ways of honoring Hashem. There's a myriad of different customs that we all have. And if it's not our custom, maybe ask, how come it's your custom? That's great. And learn from it. Maybe enjoy it. Revel in the fact that there were 12 tribes in Israel and 12 windows in a synagogue because each tribe had a way to serve God, had a way to get prayers to God. We all have unique missions. My prayer for all of us, we should have the prayer of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai with us always to serve Hashem with light, with kavanah. We should all have intention of feeling what we're doing, why we're doing it. And we should all be so that we should merit judging each other with that love and favor that Rabbi Shimon learned at the end. And in that schus, in that merit, our brothers and sisters in Israel, next Lag BaOmer, we should be with them on Lag BaOmer in Israel without any fear of any duress or any violence. I wish everyone a happy Lag BaOmer.